let's say, disarray on your hard drive. So speaking of that, speaking of anarchy and disarray, I've got notes here. You've got a bunch of oars in the water right now, and only a couple of them we're going to touch on. You've got your fingers in Plotograph, which we're going to talk about. You've got your fingers in Aurora, that software, which people are raving about. You are doing a series of worldwide photo walks around the planet. I think you need another planet because this one seems to be too small for you. You're going to be in L.A. in September. Like, all kinds of stuff going on. What am I missing? It's a million things that Trey's doing. What's happening?
Well, I try to layer all this stuff into my existing life as best possible so it's as seamless as possible. But, you know, I do love traveling. I'm a travel photographer.
Yeah.
And as long as I'm in these places, I might as well just do a photo walk. These are always free events. We spend about an hour or two out taking photos, and I give tips and tricks and try to help inspire people. You know, I'm very philosophical. I want them to be very present with their cameras and use photography as sort of a meditation to kind of help you find yourself and create yourself and just kind of be one with it all. I love all this stuff. I love spreading this message, and it seems to resonate with people. And we just finished 10 photo walks across Europe. We started in Portugal and ended up in Russia, and we had this bus that we were traveling on with the crew, and that was great. And we're about to do 20 more photo walks across Asia. We're starting in Japan at the end of August. And those are going to be all, or at the end of October, so those are going to be all free events. And then also we're doing one at Burning Man. We do a photo walk every year at Burning Man, I'm excited about. And then LA on September the 9th.
Yep. Wow. That you sound like, but you know what's interesting about when I talk to you? See, you're like, you say I'm the social lubricant. You are the business lubricant, right? Because you like, you make all things seem possible. Like, a lot of people are like, you know, I want to start a workshop, but I don't know, and they hem and haw about it. Trey does 80 of them. You know, people say, I want to travel more. Trey, you're circling the globe. You're doing all this stuff. How do you fit all this stuff in? Because you've got multiple businesses, or at least tangents of one business. You've got an awesome family over there. You've got friends. You've got coworkers. You got employees. How does Trey Radcliffe manage it all?
Well, I have a great team. I really owe everything to them. We have about 9 people that work for Stuck in Customs. And the number one thing, Fred, is always the art. I mean, I am obsessed with photography. If I'm not taking photos, I'm processing photos.
Obsession.
And the art business has been doing well. We make big prints, like 8, 9, 10 feet across for collectors, and we only do like 3 prints. And so that's been doing very well.
Yeah.
So that helps pay for the travel and everything else. But yeah, I will sleep on a bus. I'll sleep on a park bench. I just love getting out and traveling and seeing the world. It's just, it's great. I don't know why I enjoy it so much. It gives me a lot of energy. And also I find that because I get to choose who to surround myself with, I only surround myself with really positive energy, creative artists.
Yeah.
And that's great. You know, I went through a lot of my life and I had like energy vampires, you know, that would kind of drain me. And so every day I just have more and more energy. I also find that, you know, having an open heart and being vulnerable and not taking yourself seriously at all, this tends to give me a tremendous amount of energy because I'm not stuck in my own head, like not thinking about things the right way. I just kind of just go for it. I think that's what life is about, just going for it. Mm-hmm. And don't worry about the mistakes. You're talking about successes. There's a whole ton of mistakes you're not even mentioning.
Yeah.
But that's okay. I forgive myself and move on. And I just want to take pretty photos and help inspire people.
Now, do you think the concept of retirement fits into what you're going to, you know, the future of Trey? Do you think you'll ever retire, or will you just kind of, you know, start doing less as you aren't able to do as much as you're doing today?
I don't think I would ever retire because what I do is already fun. I don't even think of it as work.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I happen to have accidentally picked the perfect kind of thing for retirement because you could take photos your whole life. It's like people that like fishing. You know, they fish on the weekends or in their spare time, and they retire and they just keep on fishing. That's the same thing I'm going to do. And there's a lot of parallels between photography and fishing because this is something that maybe this is only a recent realization, is that when I go out to take photos and when I go out to take photos with my friends that are like me, we really don't care if we get a good photo or not. It's just the process of taking photos is so, you know, heartwarming and so adventurous and so exciting. And maybe a good photo will come out of it. But of course, it's the same reason fishermen love to fish. They don't really care if they get a fish. That's a bonus.
Yeah.
But I think it's the same way with photography. So I just enjoy the process and the journey of it so much. I don't know why I would ever want that journey to end.
Yeah. The process of capturing that elusive photon, right? Or combination of photons. So speaking of capturing those photons, I think I read somewhere that, what was it? You've been like an organism that sheds its skin from time to time with your photography gear, right? You will shed one brand for another if the other one, you know, like you said, it's all about the photography, right? So if another brand serves your needs better, you're not shy about saying, yeah, I'm done with this and here's why and I'm moving over there. You moved again recently, right? Or are moving again? Tell me the Hasselblad story.
Right. And so first of all, I should make it clear, it doesn't matter if these companies give me cameras or money or whatever. That has nothing to do with who I go for, right? Life is too short. I think people that have been following me on the blog for 10 years or whatever know this. I'm just brutally honest.
Yep.
But I'm still a nice guy. I don't really say bad things. I will compare, you know, and I think we would consider it quite an objective way. But yeah, I got the new Hasselblad X1D, and I love it. You know, it's the new medium format mirrorless camera.
Yeah.
It's maybe 10% bigger than my Sony A7R Mark II, which I also love.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would say the Hasselblad is definitely my go-to camera. The optics are incredible. I don't have quite the lens selection that I did because I only have three lenses, the only ones they make, the 30 prime, 45 prime, and 90 prime.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little limited, but that's okay. I just do more panoramas if I want something wider.
Yeah.
But when I was just in Japan, I would use probably that about 70% of the time and the Sony 30% of the time because the Sony is just faster. I can take more frames per second. I like to take street photos, and sometimes the Hasselblad is a little bit slow for that.
Right.
So
I use medium format, right? It's designed to be slow. Yeah. It's a considered. When I think medium format, I think tripod. You're thinking about the shot, and when you hit that plunger, you know, you hit the plunger, it's actually going to make a cha-ching sound, right?
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah.
Got it. And then on the other side, I just got the new Fuji X-T2. Is that what it's called? Mm-hmm. But I'm using that just for Burning Man because it's a great camera. I used it. I think I used the X-Pro 2 last year at Burning Man, but it's weather sealed, which is really important. It's fast. It's got great lens selection. And, you know, Fuji people, they love that thing. But this is one thing I noticed about Fuji people is that, like, Canon people, Nikon people, Sony people, we kind of know a lot about our cameras, maybe 50%, 60%, 70%. But Fuji people, they know 100% of that camera. They know every little thing it can do. They are intense. Yeah. So it's been great. Whenever I have a question, I put it out on Twitter or whatever, and I get amazing responses from really smart Fuji photographers. So I'm learning, but I understand why they like it so much.
Well, let's transition this, and I want to be respectful of your time. I know you don't have that much, but I want to talk about software for a second. So the pixels that you capture with this Hasselblad or the Sony go somewhere, and recently we've been seeing a lot of chatter online about Aurora from MacFun software, right? So tell me, and you're involved with them somehow. So tell me, what is Aurora? What is Trey's finger in that pot? How does all that stuff work?
Yeah, so this is similar to the bag situation. You know, when we made the bags with Peak Design a few years ago, I was sick of my bag. And so I called up the guys at Peak Design and said, look, I don't know anything about bag design. Actually, I don't know anything about most things. But let's put our heads together and try to design a bag. And that worked out really well. It was scary, but it worked out great. And then so I was thinking, well, I am sick of Photomatics. You know, it just doesn't do all the things I wanted to do. And I was getting more and more sophisticated in my processing, where I would make something in Photomatics, then I would have to pull it into Photoshop and do layers with the original RAWs and mix them together and mask. It was a whole process. So I thought, you could do all this in one piece of software. So I'm going to call up our friends at MacFun and say, let's build like the world's ultimate HDR software. And that's where Aurora HDR came from. And we launched it a couple years ago. And then last year we came out with Aurora 2017. Mm-hmm. And it's been huge. To date, there have been over 100 million HDR photos created with this software.
Jeez, wow.
And it's only on the Mac, okay? Which makes Windows people very angry, okay?
But that's being fixed.
And that's being fixed. But yeah, that's the big news, is that now it's finally here for Windows. And everyone can be excited. Because actually, I switched to Windows about 9 months ago myself. So
yeah, speaking of gear changes, I remember that. That was you used to be like the guy that would shave an Apple logo in the back of his head, and now you're on Windows. What's going on?
Yeah, I was. Well, you know, it was took forever for Apple to come out with a new Pro computer. As you remember, you're even hardcore Mac than I was, and I did love Apple, and I still love Apple. But it was getting really slow. Lightroom was getting really slow. And then Apple finally announced their big new computer, and it wasn't any faster than the previous one.
Yeah.
And a lot of friends get it. They didn't even like it. Just recently, they have upgraded the line. So now I do believe it's going to be faster. But I am stuck between worlds once again. I do know that my Windows machine screams. It's really fast.
Yeah.
And it's much more upgradable and this sort of thing. But I need to compare both. Once again, but it doesn't really matter because now Aurora HDR, we really want to make it, you know, the best software for all photographers, except for those weird Linux people.
Yeah, and weird Linux people direct your mail to Stuck in Customs, and they'll field your comments and suggestions. All right, so just I want to spend a little bit more time on Aurora because Photomatics, which is you actually created a tutorial on HDR software and how to do your brand of HDR many, many years ago. And, you know, that was kind of the bedrock in some ways of who Trey Radcliffe is today, right? So what you did was take your frustrations and take those over and say, okay, if I could do anything I wanted with HDR software, this is what I do. The Mac Fund people listened and incorporated all those suggestions. What are you giving up? Like, for people that were like, you know, they're looking at your Photomatics HDR tutorial right now. They're like, okay, right, I'm considering Aurora. What, you know, why would they consider Aurora versus sticking on Photomatics?
Right. The only thing people would be giving up is any familiarity they had built up with Photomatics in the past years.
Yeah.
But what they gain is so much more. The user interface is much better. Okay. Yeah. The HDR algorithm is much more powerful. You have much more control over it. One of the things that I discovered pretty early on in HDR is that when you run an HDR algorithm on a photo, it's hard to get the whole thing to look good, right? Like, mm-hmm. Part of it might look awesome, but then there might be some weird halos or some noise, or the sky might look all weird.
Yeah.
So my technique with HDR is to do different kinds of HDR on different parts of the photo, right? Mm-hmm. Almost like a zone HDR kind of system,
yeah,
right? And so what you can do with Aurora, to me, the single greatest feature is layers.
Mm-hmm.
So you can make the base the way you want it to look, and then you add a layer, and you might really amp up the HDR like on a castle or something, right? And then you just brush that part into the castle.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another area I really like called image radiance that kind of gives it this Orton glow. And so maybe you want that to happen around the sun, around the trees. So you might amp up the image radiance and then just paint that part into those areas.
Sure.
So it's totally customizable and really fast. I think that's the other thing I like about it is how fast it is. Oh, and the presets. The presets are incredible because you can see giant thumbnails at the bottom. And you don't even have to click on the presets to see what they're going to look like. You just know instantly.
That's cool. So it sounds like it's more user-friendly. Now then devil's advocate, why would someone that's like excited about HDR, whether it be, you know, artistic HDR or architectural HDR, whatever, why would they get excited over a piece of software like Aurora versus just doing it all in, say, Photoshop? Because you can do all this stuff in Photoshop, right?
You can, but it's very difficult to do a lot of this hardcore stuff.
Yeah.
Doing real tone mapping in Photoshop is just not that good. And it's hard and extremely time-consuming. This just does it with a very simple slider that's very quick and easy to use. Basically, it's just a huge time savings tool. Like, yeah. I I could do it all in Photoshop. I can make it all happen in Photoshop, but my time is valuable.
Right.
And I'm able to like produce, you know, probably 50 times as many photos, 50 times as fast using this tool versus using combinations of Lightroom and Photomatics and Photoshop.
Yeah.
Plus the workflow is easier. And it seems more logical in my mind that I can do everything I need inside this one tool. And if you want to, you can use it in coordination with Lightroom. So you can have your photo in Lightroom and you can round trip it to Aurora. The other thing that I probably don't sell enough about Aurora HDR is that you don't need to have three bracketed photos to make a good HDR photo. A single raw photo, you pull it into this, and you go down to that HDR structure area, and it will recreate your photos like you've never imagined.
See, that's crazy. That is crazy. And yeah, it's interesting. Like when I was listening to you talking about how it is basically what you're saying, it's the path of least resistance to getting to HDR to the desired results. Versus you can go around that way, but it's, you know, there's a fire, there's a thicket, there's a cobblestone path, or you could just take this straightaway paved road and get there. So yeah, that's interesting. So continuing on the software vein, though, there's another piece of software out there that you've got your hands in that's separate from Aurora HDR, which is focused on HDR. This one's completely different, although I assume you could animate an HDR photo. This one's called Plotograph. Tell me about that, because I've been publishing a couple things about this. I've been talking to those guys, and I know you're involved with them. So tell me about Plotograph and why it's cool.
Yeah, I love Troy and Sasha. I think that Plotograph is one of the coolest new technologies that I've seen in photography in a long time.
Yeah.
And the reason I've always thought about, like, why do I like it so much? And I've always had something in my head that, you know, brains and memories are not really JPEGs. They're not still moments. To me, memories are kind of like extended moments where there's movement and you just kind of remember a bit of a scene. And I think I bet 100% of people that have seen Harry Potter and seen those moving pictures, you think like, oh, that's so cool, yeah. A moving picture. And I understand why it can be jarring to a lot of traditional photographers, because like a photograph isn't supposed to move. Like everyone has to define things, like what things should and shouldn't do.
Right.
You know, I'm not like that. I'm much more creative. I'm like, there's no right answers. There's no wrong answers. It's all just kind of in this, you know, sea of probability, right? Mm-hmm. And for me, when I look at a photo and it starts to move, I find it just mesmerizing. And the cool thing about this tech, you start with a single JPEG, and then it allows you to, for example, to animate the clouds. And it looks like a movie, even though it comes from a single JPEG. And the real trick is that it loops around and starts again, but you can't see where the loop is.
See, that is the magic. So seamlessly looping. And this is a... So a lot of people will be thinking, yeah, what Trey's describing is a cinemagraph, right? This is not a cinemagraph, because what may be lost on some people is that you said you're starting with a still photograph. You're not starting with a video, which is what typically, generally speaking, a cinemagraph needs to start with a video clip that was moving to begin with, and you freeze it and release some motion in it. This is completely different, right?
Yeah, a lot of people do think it's like a cinemagraph, and you kind of have to get your head around it that it's not.
Yeah.
For one thing, a cinemagraph is hard to capture because you're going to have to set up to a little movie file, and you have to find the right kind of scenario where some stuff is moving and stuff, some stuff isn't. And then editing the cinemagraph always seems a little bit not so easy.
Yeah.
And oftentimes with the cinemagraph, you can see a loop. You know, you can see when it restarts.
See the jerk, so it's kind of, or the bounce. Like, yeah.
And so this allows you to go back through your last several years of photos, however long you've been taking photos, and animate them. And I've noticed that when you share these animated photos online, because now everyone loops, Instagram, yeah. Facebook, Twitter, all of them, is they get like, you know, 30, 40, 50 times the social engagement as normal.
Yeah.
So it's, and it's just really fun and it's easy. We actually just released the iPad and iPhone app, for iOS. So we have a scaled down version of it.
Yeah.
It's quite inexpensive. And it's been doing great. In fact, right now it's at number 17 in the App Store. Which
that's
is not.
It's in millions of apps, right? That's amongst a crowd of millions. It's in double digits. That's crazy that it could do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I believed in these guys the first time I saw them.
Same here.
And then, you know, full disclosure, I'm part owner in the company now just because I believe in it so much.
Yep.
I've just been having a ball using it. And now the masses, the online version, which is very robust and meant for professionals, that's maybe a little bit more expensive. Maybe some people can't afford it, but it's $20 a month mm-hmm. or $30 a month based on your budget. There's also a free version where you can unlock features based on how many followers you have.
Oh, wow.
But the iOS version is quite affordable, I believe.
It's like $5. It's $4.99,
right? $5. Yeah, it's a special right now, $5. I think it'll go up. It's scaled down, but still super powerful.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so I'm gonna put you on the spot here. So you've been raving about this software, and I'm guessing that you're in front of a really powerful computer right now. So you want to share? You want to do a quick demo of what this software can do? I think you might have an image or two it might work on.
Got a few. Got a few images. All right, can you see this on my screen now?
Yeah, I see it.
Okay, so this was taken here in New Zealand, just down the road from me. And as you can see, it's currently animated. Okay, mm-hmm. Well, how does it work? Okay, I loaded up a single JPEG file. Let me hit pause here. And what you can see up here are arrows, okay? So I can click the animate button, and I just kind of drag it across a shape in the sky, like this, like that. The longer the arrow, the faster it goes, okay? And then you might see all these little red dots down here. These are anchor spots. You can use a brush, but I like to use these things called anchor spots or stabilizer points. Mm-hmm. And so basically, everything under here will not move, okay?
You're like putting a pin in fabric, right?
Exactly. I put a pin in fabric. And I'm going to do it a little bit down here because I want the water to move a little subtly too. Okay. And then I can click here. Okay. And you can go to the different presets. There's one here called the Ratcliffe effect.
Oh, God. You're kidding me. There's a Ratcliffe effect in there?
I recommend it. Hey, I want you to know that was their idea. It wasn't my idea. But I was like, you want to do it? I was like, okay. So then anyway, I press play. And what it does is now start to render it all on the back end because mm-hmm. it's a tremendous amount of computing power to figure out how to turn this into an animation and have it loop around smoothly.
Yeah.
These are just a few of the features. I'll show you one other picture after this once it gets going.
Yeah.
Difference.
This is cool because like you said before, you have to get your head around what's happening here because this is a still shot that you. When you shot it, you weren't really thinking, I'm going to shoot this for animation, but you can then go back after the fact and make those decisions and add animation, which is crazy.
Absolutely. So there you can see how smooth it is. You could watch it for hours and never see the loop. Okay, let me show you. I'll show you a complex one. Okay, this one is really easy, right? Just because we had movement in the clouds and nothing else really was moving. So let me go back here and I'll show you a much more complex one. And this is about as complex as it gets. And even though this one is complex, it only took me about 10 minutes to make.
Because you're just dropping points and drawing animation vectors, right?
That's right. So this is Lake Wakatupu here on the South Island. These are the Southern Alps. And so in this one, what I want the clouds to do is I want the clouds to be coming up over my head mm-hmm. and I want the reflection in the water to do the exact same thing, but in the opposite way.
Yeah.
And then there's also these little bits of fog in the middle that are moving around. Okay. I had to drop a lot of pins because other parts that I don't want to move, like the tops of the peaks and so on and so forth. I will tell you while this renders, I'll tell you one big feature that's different with the iPad and the iPhone version. Is that as soon as you press play on those, it's immediate. Because we moved all the code to the GPU inside the iPhone and the iPad. And so you can adjust the speed, make it go faster and slower. Really powerful.
Whereas this one is sending it up to, it's sending the data up to the cloud to crunch the numbers and then sending it back down, kind of like an Amazon Echo device or something, right?
Exactly, right. It's sending it to our servers in Bulgaria, I guess.
Got it.
So cool. And the other thing you can do, which I won't show you now, but you can export this, and then it's immediately available inside of Instagram or Facebook or what have you. I think the actual file that you export is maybe only 5 seconds long, 10 seconds long. It's an MP4. Mm-hmm. But you can also export these at 4K. you know, there's a lot of big commercial entities that are doing this, like showing a sneaker stepping in water or smoke coming off of a car. So if you're a commercial photographer, it's a really interesting thing you can deliver to your clients, and they'll look at it, they'll be like, how'd you do this? And then, you know, something special that you have.
That's crazy.
So now, if you look at this one closely, you'll see there's lots of things happening. You can see that there's fog moving across under the mountains. Mm-hmm. The clouds are all going in different directions, looping smoothly. And the last thing you might see is this kind of snowfall. We have these new overlays right here. You click on this, the overlay library. You can add in different kinds of snow flurries. You could add in rain, smoke, all kinds of stuff.
That's pretty crazy. All from a still photo.
Yeah, all from a still photo.
Wow. Now, what do you like from sort of an industry, I don't know, philosophical standpoint? Do you see this as like photograph or animating your images? Do you see this as a future of photography, or is this where photography is heading, considering the number of screens and CPUs that everyone has around them at all times?
I don't think that this is like the only direction that photography is heading. I think photography is heading into a lot of different directions.
Yeah.
And there's no need for one of them to win, you know. It's kind of like saying, well, you know, what's where's the human population going? Are they all moving to New York or Tokyo? That doesn't matter. Both cities are awesome and they're both growing.
Yeah.
But this is a very new, fun thing, and people are just very, not everyone's into this, but some people just love watching a photo that moves. And yeah. If you think about it, once you have the ability to put these on your screens at home, which you can, looking at this versus a still photo, it's not better or worse, it's just different.
Yeah.
You certainly see how people walking through your house will look at a photo and watch it loop and go like, what is that? Is that a video? Is it a photo? What's going on? I think this is probably one of my favorite aspects of it, is that it's a little confusing to people.
Mm-hmm.
I think counterintuitively, as an artist and as a creative, you like to confuse people and make their mind wonder, what exactly is going on there? And I think that's kind of a fun place to be artistically.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. I said in a blog post after an interview I did with Sasha and Troy that it feels like a new form of art. You know, it's a new way for artists to express themselves. But that's not to say that, you know, just because they have a new paintbrush in their, you know, on the palette there, or a new color combination on the palette, that they have to do everything in that, right? I think my prediction would be some enterprising photographers will start blending these, like even photographs with traditional cinemagraphs, where you have a looping, you know, background like yours, and then some sort of tactile movement in the foreground as well. The sky's the limit. They're just pixels, right? So, yeah.
Look, you have to, I think if you're a photographer nowadays, obviously you have a lot of tech people that watch your show, always, even if you're not into it, it's good to play around with it and practice it and stay very fresh and uncomfortable trying new tech, because I promise you, in 10 years, people aren't going to be flipping Instagram on their phones, right?
Yeah.
They're going to have on AR or VR headsets. They're going to be in 360 space.
Yeah.
The idea that photos were once these little squares that are on Instagram, people will be like, they were. People will look at those all day.
Yeah.
No, everything's going to totally change. And we're going to have to build, the creatives of this earth, are going to have to build content for all this new stuff. There's going to be 360 photos, 360 movies, 360 photographs. There's just going to be all kinds of content that we have to create for the new medium.
Yeah.
And even though everyone's like, oh, I don't have many followers on Instagram, that's not good. It doesn't matter. Instagram, it's not going to be around in 5 or 10 years.
Yeah.
It's completely different. So the point is just play with new tech and always be looking at the new mediums that humans are going to be interacting with, because it's not going to be the same in 10 years.
Yep, I agree. I agree 100%. You know what I'm looking forward to? And mark my words here, this may have happened already, but I'm guessing it hasn't. I want to see a gallery in some big city that is completely empty. It's like a warehouse with nothing but white panels in there, and they hand you VR goggles at the door or whatever, some sort of mechanism to see the art, and you walk in and you see the art in 3D, whether it's motion or still or whatever. I think that would be killer, because now you're in a gallery.
Great. Yeah, and everyone may see slightly different paintings on the wall based on their profile.
Yeah, see? We got to do this. We got to put it together.
Yeah, do it.
Cool, man. So what's coming up for you, Trey? I'm going to let you go in a second here. What's coming up? We mentioned those photo walks. On September 9th, there's a photo walk in Los Angeles. If people that are listening to this are around and want to sign up for it, I assume stuckincustoms.com, they can go sign up.
Yep, we'll have a Facebook event also. That's right. And just hanging out, taking photos.
You're heading to Burning Man in a minute, though, aren't you?
Burning Man in about 2 weeks. Yep. That'll be fun. We have a photo walk there every year. It's always fun for photos and experimentation.
Yeah. How long have you been going there? How many years so far?
7 years.
How has it changed since year one to year seven?
I don't think it's changed much. I think I've changed a lot.
Yeah.
And it's sort of it's a new and same kind of experience every time, and you mm-hmm. get out of it, whatever you want to get out of it.
Yeah.
I know it's really helped me artistically to push boundaries and try new things. I read a really interesting book from this neurologist talking about the more open-minded you are, there's a direct correlation between that and how creative you are, right? Mm-hmm. How much stuff you can create and how much energy you have to create. Yeah. So I find it's a really good place to go be open-minded and non-judgmental and just have fun, you know, with the fabric of everything that is to be human.
Yeah.
And so it's a great place for that. And artistically, I take a lot of chances that I don't normally take. Like, I remember that very first year I was there, I was wearing these orange goggles, goggles to protect me from the sandstorms and stuff. And so everything I saw had this orange filter. So reds were like super red and yellows, and my glasses were always dirty. And then I would look at my photos, and my photos didn't have that. So I thought, I wonder if I can really like push the Lightroom presets to make it look like it did through my goggles.
Yeah.
And so I started making these really extreme Lightroom presets, and it didn't even cross my mind to sell them. But then we started selling Lightroom presets. And we sold like tens of thousands of these things. And then I started wearing different kinds of glasses and doing different kinds of stuff just to see how I could push the Lightroom presets in different ways. And not all of them look great, but some are really interesting. And I never would have tried that had I not tried to like break Lightroom with the most extreme presets I could.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. I love it. Again, another prediction in the future. I'm going to be able to put on my glasses or goggles and be able to look at the world through a Trey Radcliffe preset, right?
Why not? That would be cool.
Right? It would be cool to do that. We were born too early, man. Cool, Trey. Well, thank you, man, for coming on. So
Aurora 2018 for Mac and Windows is August 15th.
It's August 15th. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's the day it drops. And it's not just that it's the same thing for Windows. It's that both versions have all new features, twice as fast algorithms for HDR tone mapping, a bunch of new stuff, parity. Windows users get everything Mac users get. And some might say the Windows version is even faster.
Yeah, we'll see about that. We'll pit it against the best Mac in your Windows machine. We'll see.
We'll do a side-by-side.
There you go. Cool. All right. And I wanted to get a demo from you of Aurora. I know you're running out of time. So if you could, you have a demo online. Are you going to create one? You can give it to me and I'll embed it in the blog post for this.
I will. In fact, we're making all of our little product videos right now. And I'm putting together some simple tutorials, like a little 90-second amuse-bouche that shows you how easy it is. And then I'm going to do more of a deep dive video. Maybe it goes 5 or 10 minutes to show some of the great complexities. It's great for beginners or advanced, so I want to make different kinds of videos for the different audiences.
That's awesome. I like I'm intrigued by the idea that you can use just one raw image to get some good results out of versus, which kind of opens up a lot of the world versus, you know, you have to put your camera on a tripod and, you know, and make sure all three images are perfectly registered. If you can just do it with one shot, there's a lot more alternatives that you have to shoot in terms of things that were moving to begin with, right?
That's right. And I think people inherently know this, especially if you use Lightroom, how much data there is in a RAW file. There's a lot of light in that RAW file.
Yeah.
And really, I think people have gotten maybe too used to Lightroom is that, oh, I can just adjust the highlights and the shadows and the whites and the, and you think that's all there is, but there's a lot more in there. And these tone mapping algorithms inside Aurora can really pull some magic out of those raw shots.
Love it. Love it. Trey Radcliffe, thank you, sir. I will see you soon, maybe in LA. You're going to be in LA in a couple weeks, or?
I will. Yeah, come on down, FBJ. Let's keep the party going down there.
We'll come down there. We'll party it and get banned from the town. How about that?
All right, I like it.
Stuck in customs, banned from LA.
Next level, I like it.
All right, Trey. Thanks a lot, man.
Bye.
All right, see ya.